good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington, D.C. Uganda's foreign minister denies accusations the government is suppressing dissent.
This is rather strange for anybody to say so, because it is tantamount to saying, allow us to die.
Joe Biden's special advisor talks about disrupting the narrative that wrongly equates disability to inability.
I usually ask this question anywhere I travel. And I ask the question, if you see a person with a visible disability walking down the street, what comes to your mind?
And anti-corruption campaigners call on Malawian President Lazarus Chakwera to fire Martha Chizuma, the Director General of the Anti-Corruption Bureau.
My call was more based on the ACB director performances in the fight against corruption. You may be interested to know that I was one of those who also strongly supported her appointment.
Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Faso's new military leader, Captain Ibrahim Traore, told VOA in an interview Saturday he is not looking for a confrontation with Burkinabe forces that might be supporting the ousted junta. The fight we are engaged in is not about power, he said. Military officers Friday claimed to have ousted junta leader Paul Henri Sandaogo Damiba, saying he had failed to quash a growing Islamist insurgency. The fight we are leading is for Burkina Faso, Traore said. You have to go deep into the bush to understand certain things. Can you imagine that we go into villages and see all the leaves on the trees have disappeared because people are eating those leaves? People even eat grass. We are proposing solutions that could allow us to produce and protect these people. We are not being heard. We propose so many solutions, and I understand that in the end, we are playing politics, he said. We want to protect our people. We want to get our people out of this misery, this underdevelopment, this insecurity. That's the fight. Damiba took power in January after a coup, replacing President Roch Marc Christian Kabore, whom Damiba had accused of failing to deal with the Islamist insurgency. Agence France Presse reports the general staff of Burkina Faso's army has dismissed the coup as an internal crisis within the military. Damiba wrote on the president's Facebook page that his rivals should come to their senses to avoid a fratricidal war that Burkina Faso doesn't need. Traore told VOA, we are waiting for a national forum that will choose a president. We are not here for power. Uganda's foreign minister says the East African country is committed to working with its neighbors to end conflict and to ensure peace and stability in the region. General J.J. Odongo is currently in Washington for bilateral meetings with officials of the U.S. government, says Uganda houses the largest refugee settlement in East Africa. His remarks come as Uganda marks 60 years of bilateral relations between the government in Kampala and Washington. The foreign minister also denied accusations that the government uses the COVID-19 pandemic to suppress dissent and free speech. In part two of this Skype interview, General J.J. Odongo talks to me about criticisms that the government is using the health emergency to clamp down on the opposition.
This is rather strange for anybody to say so, because it is tantamount to saying, allow us to die. We have a responsibility towards our citizens in making sure that they are alive so that they can be able to criticize. We've taken actions as a government that we are very, very proud of, but have also had a very debilitating effect on us. Proud because we were able to suppress spread, we were able to minimize fatalities. 44 million Ugandans, only 3,500 in a two-year period, died. That, in by any means, is commendable. It is true, because of our limited resources, we were only consigned to a very unfortunate way of controlling the way of lockdown. This, of course, had a very significant effect on our economy, and as we are now, we are struggling to see how we can come out of the challenges of the economy. We are struggling to see to it that we are able to go back to the pre-COVID-19 levels of economic activity.
Opposition groups have accused your government of human rights abuses and using state institutions, including the police, the military, the court, to suppress their activities. They said that is undermining the Ugandan constitution. When you hear such criticism, Mr. Foreign Minister, how do you respond to them?
Peter, Uganda is a very robust and interesting country. The only way you can prove this is come to Uganda, either by road or by air. And the moment you land in the territory of Uganda, you will see the bustle of activity. You will see the activities of all individual citizens. The critics would like to carry out a narrative because they have nothing better to do.
I've heard some people say that why is Uganda not condemning the invasion of Ukraine by Russia, and that Uganda seemed to be sitting on the fence. Opposition groups, including the leading opposition group, the NUP, says Uganda must come out and join the world to condemn Russia, but Uganda has refused to do so. Your response to that?
Peter, first and foremost, we condemn the method of resolving conflicts by forceful means, because we know the pain and suffering that it brings. We have always advocated that in resolving conflicts, let us use dialogue. The position that we are taking is simply because we seek to further the argument for dialogue. We must continue to engage. Isolation of Russia will deny us the opportunity to be able to engage them in a dialogue, because we have learned through experience that dialogue gives us lasting solutions. No military actions can give you that.
I recently spoke with a coffee farmer in Uganda, and he is of the view that coffee can make Uganda very, very rich and improve its GDP. So he said, ask the foreign minister what the government is doing to help farmers to grow more coffee, to export more coffee, so that they can earn some good living. How do you respond to that, Mr. Foreign Minister?
Absolutely, I agree. We need to export more coffee out of Uganda in order to be able to create a larger demand than now. Interestingly, only a short while ago today, I had a discussion with a gentleman, a discussion in which we were looking at how to establish cargo freight flights out of Uganda direct into markets like China, into markets like USA, and into markets like Europe. We at this material time do not have such opportunities. We do not have those facilities. And when our products have to be flown out of Kampala, they have to go to transit through Addis Ababa, through Dubai, through Qatar, and when they sit on the runway, the quality of our products deteriorates. So we think that one way in which we can help our farmers is to be able to create cargo services with large haulage to take out these products from you.
General JJ Odongo is Uganda's foreign minister. He spoke with me via Skype from here in Washington, D.C. Sarah Minkara, President Joe Biden's special advisor on international disability rights, says her blindness is a big part of who she is. She says it has shaped her purpose, her career, and her path in how she sees the world. She is internationally recognized as an advocate for leadership, empowerment, disability, inclusion, and social enterprise. Minkara's remark comes as she plans a visit to Nigeria ahead of the West African country's general election next year. Voters will go to the polls on February 25th to choose a new president and other national, state, and local officials. For more on her planned trip, I reached Biden's special advisor, Sarah Minkara, via Microsoft Teams. In part two of the interview, she talks about disrupting the narrative that often equate disability to inability and how the media portrays those affected.
I usually ask this question anywhere I travel. And I ask the question, if you see a person with a visible disability walking down the street, what comes to your mind? And a lot of times people tell me, I feel bad for them. They're suffering. They're struggling. I'm grateful that I don't have this. Or we have the other extreme narrative, which is, as we call, the inspiration porn narrative. Oh my God, they're amazing. Why? Just because they're living their life? We still haven't come to a narrative where we are expecting people with disabilities to be out and about, living life, going to school, having jobs, having families, and being contributing members of society. That narrative is yet not normalized. And that's what we need to get to that point. But because we still have that pity narrative or the inspiration porn narrative, that leads us to, as a society, to create systems, spaces, programs, policies that are not inclusive of people with disabilities because we don't see the value of including them. So until we get society to see the value in the inclusion of persons with disabilities, we're still going to see the exclusion and the marginalization of persons with disabilities. So that's what we need to get to that point. And narrative change is really important. And working with media and folks like you, right, to really be able to promote that value-based narrative. I always mention this example. I was a math major in college, and I used to have classmates come up to me and they're like, Sara, what classes are you taking next semester? And I'm like, oh, what does that matter? And they're like, well, whenever you're in the classroom, the professor becomes a better teacher. So by me being in that class, right, the professor had to become a better teacher because he had to explain things in a different way and or articulate things better. Who benefited? Everyone. So we need to really bring that point forward and saying when we include people with disabilities, not only are we tapping into their value and their innovation, but also when we create a space that's accessible for more, everyone benefits.
So as you go to Nigeria, what are your expectations? Let me ask you that briefly.
My expectations, I mean, we're going to have a variety of different meetings with civil society, with our implementing partners, with members from government, with the election commission, with business leaders. And ultimately, our conversations are, one is to understand the landscape of the disability community on the ground, understand what efforts are happening and what best practices are happening and how can we learn from Nigeria and bring it forward to other parts of the world? What are some gaps and challenges and how can we support in some of these challenges? And ultimately, how do we keep on promoting the voices of persons with disabilities as the elections are coming up? And as we are looking into economic development, you know, we want to really be able to provide technical assistance support in the inclusion of persons with disabilities.
Now, before we go, Special Advisor Miminkara, what message do you want to send to Nigerians about people living with disability ahead of the elections and perhaps in the future?
Okay, I have a couple of messages. One is when we're looking at elections and when we're the upcoming elections in February and we're looking at inclusive elections and promoting disability inclusive democracy, I don't want us to stop at the point of just accessing, you know, voting pools, polls, and being able to vote. That's a really important point, and that's we need to make sure we address that. But I want us to ask ourselves a question: do we see persons with disabilities running for election? Are they at the table? Are they at the table when it comes to policy development? Are we having persons with disabilities engaging in conversations beyond disability? They're talking about COVID crisis, climate change, women's rights, etc. Are they at the table? That's my first question. But the other is more, this is a value-based perspective. From a person with a disability point, I say to people with disabilities, be proud of who you are. You know, disability, to be honest, I say my disability is one of my strengths and it's an important identity. It's a journey for me to come to that point. It wasn't something I, you know, it wasn't switching a button. It was a journey for me to really come to a point to say, I'm proud to be blind. I'm proud to be a person with disabilities. It's one of my strengths. And I that's a part, big part of who I am. The reverse is when it comes to society, my message to society is, I want you to see the disability community from a value-based lens. I want you to always ask the question, are we including people with disabilities? If not, why not? And if yes, how can we do more?
Sara Miminkara is President Joe Biden's Special Advisor on International Disability Rights. She spoke with me via Microsoft Teams from Washington. In South Africa, the Thembikile Foundation has appointed to its advisory board Clever Mpoha, the group chief executive of the Zambia-based Savenda Management Services Limited. Representatives of the foundation say the board seeks to bring like minds together to resolve challenges facing the continent, including development. Mpoha's background in entrepreneurship as head of the Savenda Group of Companies and Philanthropy will help the organization to achieve its objective. The Thimbikele Foundation's vision is to ensure that all learners in selected rural schools have access to education, infrastructure, and the right to quality lives in South Africa. It also seeks to continue Nelson Mandela's legacy by promoting health education programs in rural schools. For reaction to his appointment to the advisory board of the foundation, I reached Clever Mpoha in the Zambian capital, Lusaka.
It is always a pleasure to work and contribute to the great Africa population in any form, in any way, because, as you know, we believe that Africa should be developed by us Africans. Of course, working with the West and working with people that will help us. But at the same time, we need to come up in front. We cannot always be at the back. We need to be in front to be able to help our youth who may not be privileged. And the foundation itself is doing fantastic work in Africa and in South Africa. So to be appointed or recognized to be on a advisor and the focus on education, the focus on health of the less privileged and the communities, which resonates well with what we're already doing, helping the girl child, education and so forth. So for us, we find it's a privilege to contribute.
So what do you bring to the table for this organization, and in terms of achieving its objective for which it was established, what do you bring to the table?
First of all, I'm an entrepreneur. Being an entrepreneur, it means that you know, we believe that one has to make money by doing good. Now, doing good to who? Doing good to the communities that we work in, and being good to the environment that we are working in. Now, of course, my experience is that their objective is to help the growth or help improve lives of children in South Africa, and eventually the greater Africa. We'll be sharing our experience in what we have been doing, not only in Zambia, but in other countries where we operate. And we also think that that will open new opportunities. As an entrepreneur, we always look at things to a level of sustainability. How can the organization be sustainable? How can it sustain itself beyond the resources that come along with them? How can we think different to keep the organization going? Because the organization is not only for South Africa, the organization for Africa, because Africa is the future of the world. So unless everybody is tagged along or is pulled along, there's no point of having one group very successful while everybody else is down. It will not help us. So we need to uplift lives in the communities. And you see most of our projects focusing, targeting the less privileged, because our philosophy, like I have always said, we like to make money while doing good.
So in your view, how can the disadvantaged African youth benefit from your appointment to the board, and what impact do you anticipate the organization having on their individual lives across Africa?
Our idea has always been to put Africa first. Now, when you look at the communities where the Africans live, they may not be the best there is. Now, if you improve lives in the communities where people are, just generally in Africa, for example, if we take Africa, we divide it, Southern Africa, we divide North Africa. When you look at North Africa, our brothers are always running across the sea to get into Europe to search for good life. Now, if the opportunities are given to them where they are, they don't need to risk their lives across oceans and end up as refugees. So if we have to look at Africa in general and reverse this trend, then each one of us needs to play a role in the circles, in the areas, in the localities where we are. And this is the reason we started helping Girl Child, because at the end of the day, the Girl Child is more vulnerable. So how do you help them? By empowering them. If they can get to school, and if their health is up to date, they will always be the future mothers and future destiny shepherds, because if you educate a girl child, you educate a nation.
Clever Mpoha is the group chief executive of the Zambia-based Avenda Management Services Limited. He spoke with me from the capital, Lusaka. In Malawi, anti-corruption campaigners are calling on President Lazarus Chakwera to fire Martha Chizuma, the Director General of the Anti-Corruption Bureau. They argue that the head of the anti-graft agency appears to be too slow in prosecuting public officials who are alleged to be involved in corruption. But supporters say the call is misplaced, since the anti-graft agency must be thorough in compiling evidence needed to effectively prosecute the accused. Governance and human rights activist Undule Mwakusungula says Chizuma should consider resigning to save their reputation and credibility and to avoid national ridicule. He says Malawians have not yet seen any response to the report to the president by the anti-graft body naming alleged suspects, including Vice President Saulos Chilima. The vice president says the allegations are without merit. For more on the call for the resignation or firing of the Director General of the Anti-Corruption Bureau, I reach Undule Mwakasungula.
My call was more based on the ACB director performance in the fight against corruption. You may be interested to know that I was one of those who also strongly supported her appointment. Therefore, I have the right to speak a question on the operation of the Anti-Corruption Bureau performance as a citizen of this country.
Are you saying that the director of the Anti-Corruption Bureau has not performed to your expectation or to the expectations of Malawians?
Yeah, I might say that or not, but I think this is what maybe has prompted me to maybe speak on this issue. And I'm sure honestly, sober-minded Malawians will agree with me that the ACB director has been dragging on cases. We have the ACB being more, like, say, for example, very, very slow in pursuing cases. We have seen also selectiveness of cases, but somehow also lacking some strategic direction and maybe leadership quality. So those are some of the things maybe myself and some other Malawians would want to see the ACB do better, actually.
But Undule, some people are suggesting that the ACB has to be given enough time to carry out its investigation to gather the needed evidence in order to ensure success when they go to court, you know, to prosecute those alleged who have committed financial impropriety or financial malfeasance. Why don't you allow them to do so?
Yeah, but you know, you cannot start mentioning people when you don't have thorough investigations, thorough evidence. And that's where the question is, you know. You know, when this report was presented, there was a lot of excitement from Malawians, and a lot of Malawians thought there would be movement. And the report showed that there's evidence already. So to me, I feel you cannot start implicating people, mentioning their names, when you don't have enough evidence. So how investigations profile before you implicate people, before you, start mentioning people's names in it?
So are you saying that, are you calling on the president to replace the director of the Anti-Corruption Bureau? Because he is the only appointing authority. The president has reposed confidence in the director of the Anti-Corruption Bureau to continue with the task of combating or investigating acts of financial malfeasance or impropriety or corruption. Are you therefore saying that the president should reconsider either sacking her or replacing her? Is that your stance?
To me, what I'm saying, it's up to the president to decide whether the president wants for her to continue serving her. And we have to know also that she only has, if I'm not wrong, only 1 year to go, according to her contract, actually.
Ndiule Mwakasungula is a governance and human rights activist. He spoke with me from the Malawian capital, Lilongwe. In New York, George Mirikuduka, the Ghanaian Deputy Minister for Lands and Natural Resources, says the government is implementing new measures to combat illegal gold mining. The move, he says, forms part of the effort to prevent the destruction of water bodies and the environment caused by the activity. His remarks come after a public outcry over concerns that illegal mining, a local Ghanaian term also called galamse, is destroying water bodies in several parts of the country. Several foreigners, including Chinese nationals, have been arrested for allegedly committing crimes. Officials of the government, Duka says, are also worried about the effect illegal mining is having on the environment and water bodies. In a Skype interview on the sidelines of the just-concluded UN General Assembly, Deputy Lands and Natural Resource Minister talks to me about efforts to create value-added or enhanced products from the country's natural resources, including with the construction of a refinery.
So we've built, in collaboration with a private partner, built a refinery that will be commissioned soon by His Excellency the President. And if that is done, I believe the net will be cast wide for us to rope in more employees in the sector, more, we'll have some kind of injection into the economy in terms of what we produce, because then we've added more value to what we have. So we're turning the space of the mining industry in Ghana, making sure that the people of our country benefit from what they have been gifted by God.
What's Ghana's commitment towards the reduction of the use of mercury in the mining sector as part of the commitment towards the Minamata Convention, briefly?
Yes, excellent question. You know, Ghana is a signatory to the Minamata Convention, and the Minamata Convention seeks to reduce the use of mercury. And you know, mercury is poisonous. And for that matter, we've purchased mercury-free machines to support the small-scale mining sector. And that is doing, I mean, the magic. I mean, it's been wonderful. And the return, so to speak, is also great as compared to the use of mercury. If you use mercury, you are likely to get about 40-45% of gold threshold from the ore. But with the use of mercury-free machine, obviously not using mercury, not adding poison to the soil and land, you're likely to get not less than 90% of your anticipated gold from the ore. And that is refreshing enough. And Ghana has shown that commitment towards the Minamata Convention, and we are proud of that. And that is what we've been working on assiduously now. And let me put it on record that Ghana is also part of the Kimberley process in terms of diamond production. And it talks about traceability. And this traceability is also to ensure that where we get our diamond is clean, I mean, is transparent, and we're not getting it from illegal process. And we using the same method in the field of gold, making sure that we get all our gold production, you know, entities well regulated and all that, and we follow, you know, accordingly. Sometimes you get reports from concessionaires and that of our workers on the field, I mean, district officers and all that, that when they visit a concession, for example, just to make sure that they are following protocols, they are sometimes, in a way, threatened because the person may not have the license, the requisite document. So asking questions may infuriate or get some kind of negative response. So what we've done also is to create a QR code signpost. So there wouldn't be the need for you to go there and ask questions. So you hold in your QR code instrument, you get there, you put it on the signpost. If the license is up to date, you have all the details There's no need going there to ask questions for you to be harassed and all, you know, all that. So these are gamut of measures we put in place to regularize the whole sector. And I believe Ghana's mining sector will be a brighter industry in future.
George Mreku Duka is the Ghanaian Deputy Minister for Lands and Natural Resources. He spoke with me from New York. It is now nearly 2 weeks since Queen Elizabeth II was buried at the King George VI Memorial Chapel. Now her death has triggered extensive discussion about the legacy of the British monarchy in countries around Africa. One aspect of that legacy is the name of many British royals still attached to institutions, place and street. For VOA, James Shimanyula from the Kenyan capital Nairobi takes a closer look at how the East African nation citizens regard those names.
At Nairobi's Jivanji Garden, there is an empty block of stone where the statue of Britain's Queen Victoria once stood. The statue was beheaded and torn down by vandals in 2015. However, the vast freshwater lake that Kenya, Uganda, and Tanzania share still bears her name. In these former British colonies and others on the continent, many places still carry names prominent on the British royal family tree. There are those who want British names dropped altogether. Governments around Africa have done so in recent decades, replacing the Elizabeths, Victorias, Andrews and Edwards with the names of African heroes. In Nairobi, in 1963, Victoria Street was renamed Tom Mboya Street. Mboya was a colonial-era activist who had vigorously pressed the country's British rulers to release Jomo Kenyatta from detention. Kenyatta went on to become president of an independent Kenya in 1963. On Tom Mboya Street, Alfred Odhiambo is among those who are glad the name was changed.
A person like Tom Mboya is a very important person in our country.
See.
Kenya should continue. But the change is good. Tom Mboya is our own. But Victoria, you see, she's a queen, but she's dead now.
Wairimu Irungu favors naming places for Kenyan heroes, such as politician Ronald Ingala, who was assassinated in 1972.
When I walk through those roads, Ronald Gara or Tom Mboya Road, I'm proud to walk those roads that are named after our fighters.
British explorers and colonial government officials named many of Africa's famed landmarks, such as Lake Victoria or Lake Albert, which straddles Uganda and the Democratic Republic of Congo. Lucy Wambui favors renaming them, though she notes that won't change the past.
Lake Victoria has never changed. It was named after Queen Victoria. Uganda, Kenya, Tanzania also never changed. So history remains the same. People are talking about changing names in Kenya, in other countries. But that one does not change the history. It always remains the same.
Alan Musioka says Kenyans want to see new signposts in the future.
I think it is time to change because today we have many local heroes. We should change names slowly by slowly.
Musioka would like to see places named to honor such heroes as Ferdinand Omanyala, one of Africa's fastest sprinters, Eliud Kipchoge, who became the first human in history to run a sub-2-hour marathon, and Dorcas Sagala, who has championed the rights of the girl child, women, and persons living with disabilities. James Shimanyula for VOA News, Nairobi.
This is the Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa Sports with Samson O'Malley, and that will be followed by music from our African collection. But first, it's now time for Nightline Africa Sports, and for that, let's join Samson O'Malley. Hello, Samson.
Hi, Peter, and good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. Guinea has been stripped of hosting the 2025 Africa Cup of Nations, AFCON, because the infrastructure is not yet ready. The Confederation of African Football President, Dr. Patrice Motsepe, said CAF's decision was in fact taken in July. The Confederation of African Football will now reopen bidding for the 2025 African Cup of Nations, with Morocco and Algeria among the nations set to apply. CAF President Patrice Motsepe was in the Guinean capital, Conakry, on Friday when he announced that the 24-team tournament will be removed because of a lack of suitability, advancing infrastructure and facilities. Staying with CAF, the draws for the African Nations Championship, designed for players who play in the domestic leagues across the continent, took place on Saturday in Algiers, the Algerian capital. In Group A, host Algeria will lock hands with 2014 CHAN winners, Libya, Ethiopia and Mozambique. Group B features two-time champions Congo DR, Uganda, Cote d'Ivoire and Senegal. Group C includes defending champions Morocco, Sudan, Madagascar and Ghana. Group D and E are made up of three teams each and feature Mali, Angola and Mauritania on one side and Cameroon, Congo and Niger on the other. CAF President Patrice Motsepe says Algeria will stage one of the best CHAN tournaments in recent history.
I think this CHAN competition that is going to be hosted next year in January will be the very best CHAN competition in the history of this competition. I must say that there's a huge amount of excitement, and we have a clear understanding in terms of what we are trying to achieve in football. Algeria and Africa has over many years produced some of the best football players.
The African Nations Championship will take place from 13th of January to the 4th of February 2023 in Algeria. In beach soccer, African champions Senegal defeated Egypt 5-3 to win the Council of Southern Africa Football Association's CASAFA Beach Soccer Championships in Durban on Saturday. Senegal, the most successful and accomplished beach soccer team on the continent, will now look to defend their continental title at the Beach Soccer Cup of Nations later this month in Mozambique. Mamoudou Diallo is the head coach of the Senegalese team.
I'm very happy with my players and I'm very happy for the team, because the most important, they show they have good character and they show they really love their country, and that's the most important when you play for your national team.
In tennis news, Maya Sharif became the first Egyptian to win a WTA Tour title after beating top seed Maria Sakkari of Greece in the Parma Open final on Saturday. Sharif, ranked 74th in the world, defeated world number 7 Sakkari 7-5-6-3 to win a historic title. And that's it for this week's edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Back to you, Peter.
Thanks a lot, Samson. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African sports. Nightline Africa Sports. It's Sunday on Nightline Africa, and this is the time we get to relax and reflect, a flashback with music from the continent.
One minute with you, nothing but love for you, nothing but love for you. Shorty fine, I can't deny, no. I'm falling harder. So make a speed up the tempo. Shoot my shot like a hero, not you know. Baby girl, your waist is a cutie, you don't know. But in a few months, don't know. Give me 1 minute with you. Baby, nothing but love for you. Nothing but love for you. 1 minute with you. Nothing but love for you. Nothing but love for you.
Baby, give me 1 minute. I beg you, make you just give me 1 minute. Give me 1 minute. I beg you, make you just give me 1 minute.
For love. Time no day for long thing. Oh no. Baby, let me tell you something. You'll be the one for me. Girl, it's plain to see.
my shots like I be Ronaldinho. Baby girl, your waist is a beauty, you don't know. But in a few months, don't do.
So I may be back. Baby, I'm a free, don't give up. You go so me, that's who no fuck up. But Jimmy Woody, I believe in me. Tomorrow gonna be better. But Jimmy Woody, I believe in me. Tomorrow gonna be better.
Yeah, already know and one new day. Tika Kasana, yeah, for the street. I said, you man, I'm a dear Jimmy. Medica crown, I'm a nigga cat.
I remember time I made a phone. Nobody they want to show me love.
No.
Nobody they want to name my trouble.
No.
Nobody go like to hear your story. Yo. I put so much pain inside my songs. Cause I've been on this road for so long. Now you recall you go and up and be out. Now you read now you should get that you should share. May I fall to my arrows. Thought I need better emotion to say shadow. And they be acting like craps in a barrel.
Rapper.
Me dropping tears in my trap, be careful. Yeah.
But Jimmy Woody, I believe. Tomorrow gonna be better. With Jimmy Woody, I believe in me. Tomorrow gonna be better.
They already know and no one out there. See Kakasa na inya phone is red. Ya see Jumana, be the Jimmy J. Be the Kaka na me the Kaka te.
They already know and no one out there. See Kakasa na inya phone is red. Ya see Jumana, be the Jimmy J.
The rapture's nearing, and Mr. Devil got his people cheering. But for me, I am sorry. I know one day you're gonna read my story. Boy, I am heading for the headlights. It's my life, and you decide not. It's my life, and God decide that. It's my life, and I decided. I decided. I decided. I saw me to look,
baby, kona kona. Waka waka when you enter Malika. Baby, kona kona. Do you give me sugar? Wala ala.
She wanna roll with the man that went. loving no good on me. You see your body carry something I never understand. I must confess, your body very offensive. It is scatter my defense, defense, yo. I must confess, your body not my objective. It is giving me problems, problems, yeah. My darling, would you fly with me? International, you go there with me for flight. Honey, would you stay with me? I said no, no, man. You go there with me for life. She did do me magic. Girl, your body na he kill it, babe. My head did slow like traffic. This is your body, oh. It did high like palm, yo. Oh, my leg, yo. No go do me con, yo. If na face you be Rihanna and your body na palapa. Wala, I want to with you, Asa. I must confess, your body very offensive. This got my defense. Defense, yo. I must confess, your body not my object, yo. They giving me problems. My darling, would you fly with me? International, you go there with me for flight. Honey, would you stay with me? I said no, no.
Never going broke, that's common sense. We've broke, bring a ratchet friend. Rolling with smoke, just in case of nonsense. In this life, they rather see me down, oh. That's why I wake up, thank God, oh. Look around, many rivals. After one man's flesh, we survive. Who's that plus 2, 3, 4, that's my nice, babe. Never seen before, how you mind, mate? I can't even trust myself in this climate. Animal instincts, no primate. Coming through Houston, do what I'm used to. Packs flying like a rocket from Houston. I can't love you the way that I used to. You know what, I better go get me.
And that was our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoy the music from Nightline Africa here, the English service of the Voice of America in Washington. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we're on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, including producer Kwame Ufori, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, no medicine exists that can cure hatred. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.